the things rolling as to get into our elections, which really won't take very long at all. We have what amounts to our three elected positions, treasurer, secretary, and vice president. Treasurer and secretary were elected last year, and by the bylaws, they serve a 2-year term, so they're safe for another year, or however you look at it. And appointed position is our information officer, Jim Isbell, and in discussions with Jim, he's more than happy to continue on, so I've reappointed him for another term as information officer. The main position that we'll be looking for to elect someone who is the vice president. The vice president serves really it's 3 years, because your first year you're elected, you become vice president. The following year you're the president, and your third term you become past president. In last night's discussions, we're going to place into nomination for vice president Randy Woolley of Kern County. At this time, I'd like to open it up for any other nominations for vice president. Thank you. The nominations are closed. Make it simple. If I could have a motion to have Randy elected by acclamation.
So moved.
What county?
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. Second?
Second.
San Bernardino. Thank you. If we move the second in, Randy, you're vice president. Congratulations. Said he'll hold it. Wait to see what happens where he says something.
Yeah.
One couple of things that I wanted to bring to you, just generally to the attention, referring to the bylaws last night, the terms of the elected people actually officially take office January 1st. Even though I thought I was done at noon today, I found out that I'm still president for another 2 months. But that's fine. I'm more than happy to work with Lula for next year's conference and whatever help she may need, and Randy as well. For your information, in looking at future conferences, I also looked at where the dividing line is in what they call Northern and Southern California as it relates to who hosts this conference. And actually, the line is right here at Monterey, San Benito, San Benito, Fresno, Madera, Indio. So it's up here. So Kings, Tulare, Fresno County, you're all south. So look at the odd number of years. Thank you. I just wanted to bring that up.
I'll try to get a map up on the website.
Oh, that's a good idea. Thanks, Jim. Jim's going to post that on the website. Actually, because the election will run so short, the only other piece of really business that I noticed that I think I will put in, there is nothing in the bylaws indicating any of the duties of the past president. Before somebody dreams up that your past president should really do something, I'm going to draft something to add the duties of the past president into the bylaws. Does anyone have any other questions relating to business of the organization at this time? Jim?
We had discussed some issues with the bylaws before. Do you know if there's a new copy of those bylaws floating around out there somewhere?
I don't know if there's a new copy. I got the copy that, well, I guess it was posted on the web, that's been signed, I think it was 1997.
Yeah, I don't think there's a new copy of it.
Yeah, but there's been an amendment since then.
Okay, we'll see if we find the copy. I'll check with Denise. Unfortunately, Denise, our secretary, couldn't make it to the conference this year. Okay, thank you for that. Okay, I guess if we have no further business, hopefully I can move on. And actually, today was a pleasure to have the Orange County Assessor, Mr. Webster Guillory with us, who just came down from the California Assessors Association Conference in Monterey, and is here to give us some updates and a little bit about what's going on in Orange County, as well as California Assessors Organization. It's my pleasure now to welcome the Orange County Assessor, Mr. Webster Guillory.
Well, good morning, and thank you, George. George, thank you for your leadership to this organization. And you didn't ask anything about the treasury report. Did you pay for all this? The assessors always want to know if all the bills are paid. That's a big part of this process. I understand there are 26 counties present. Well, welcome to Orange County. We're really happy to have you here. Thanks for your support to this organization. Where are you going to be next year?
Santa Cruz.
Seems like I was just there. I just left Monterey. The weather was gorgeous. So you all can look forward to a nice time. Always in October?
Yes.
Always in October, right on top of the assessors' meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, several of the assessors commented on the fact that they had staff here, and they hope that you all were having as good a time as they were. And I assured them that if you were in Orange County, you were having fun and enjoying yourself. Is that right?
Yeah.
Let's give George and the support group a hand. For the last about 4 months, I see George scurrying around the office along with Bill Price, who's the project manager of Role Support, and scurrying around the office, carrying programs and talking to people and who to invite and who can come and so on and so on. So it's been a good learning experience for George putting on a conference, but it's also been fun. And Bill's done these things before, so he was kind of watching over everything, and I didn't have to worry about too much. This morning, I have a number of things that I will talk about a little bit, and then, of course, I'd like to do some Q&A with you all and just kind of talk about the state of mapping in California and some of the interesting things that are going on around the country and some of the interesting things that are going on in our own state in this area of kind of an area today. You know, mapping used to be drawing lines with Leroy's on vellum and eye shades and, you know, sleeves rolled up and on and on. And years ago, I used to even carry one of those pocket pencil things, you know, and stick everything in there, and erasers. And so it was an interesting business. And today when I walked into the mapping session about, I don't know, 15 years ago, we got rid of all the drafting tables about 15 years ago. And now today, everyone has a little cubicle that they sit in, and they got eye shades on their screen, and they got 19-inch terminals, and they don't use pencils anymore, very limited in any way, and everything today is a mouse and a keyboard. And George has his way, it'll be all mouse and finger points, you know, things like that. So it's pretty interesting business, and it has changed a lot, and it is still going to change. The whole concept of tablet PCs and the ability that we have in the tablet PC world to be able to scribe directly onto a screen is going to morph the business some more. And the ability that we have also with photos and photopictometry is going to change the business. You know, the whole issue of just land and the ability to see the outlines of land is an important part in our business, because land is a part of the property attributes. How big is it? What does it look like? And things like that is just another property characteristic in our business, because we're in the business of valuing property for property tax purposes. So it is an important part and aspect of what we do. But in addition to that, and I think you all saw some of the things we do with our AES system, and you saw some of the things we do with photographs, and how we merge into the appraisal environment. Three-dimensional stuff, right? Mm-hmm. 3D, ability to walk around a building and from all four sides and not even be there. And we have the ability to see a house and to go right around that house in our photographs and not even, you know, be on site. We take those photographs every couple of years, and I understand that that'll even be every year in the time to come. And we also have the ability to take a look at three-dimensional mapping, topology, and hydrology, And all these other things are going to come more into play in the businesses of value property. Some of you are aware that down in Laguna, we had a considerable landslide earlier this year. We lost 24 houses were affected, but 8 houses were totally destroyed. A large piece of land, a fairly large piece of land. How large? Well, probably 3 or 4 acres, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
More than 3 to 4 acres, maybe 5 acres. The whole hillside just slumped right down the hill after the rains earlier this year. And that is going on in other places and things. So, you know, where people build and how they build is one thing, but where people build is going to become, in our county at least, and in many other places, is more and more important. The issues with photo and photopictometry are very valuable issues because they deal with this whole concept of data and information. You know, someone has said, people say from time to time, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, in our business, how many words is a picture really worth? What do you think? More than 1,000?
Depends on the size of the house.
Depends on the size of the house. That's kind of an interesting one. We can get you to elaborate on that. But a picture is worth way more than 1,000 words. You deal in digital. And when you, if you deal in the digital word, if you deal in a digital sentence, and the contents of information in a sentence, you may have a few kilobytes, right? But if you deal with the content of the information in a picture, you got more than 1,000 words. You're somewhere in above 144,000 words in the context of a picture. So you need to kind of think about that. Pictures are worth a lot of words, many, many words. So it's an area that you want to start to delve into and adjust your thinking. Pictures convey a lot of information. And today, because they're in color, there's even more information, right? Black and white, we've gone to color. You can see how things change from year to year. You can see height, depth, and location. And so the pictures are very valuable. How many of you have a county GIS system? How many of you do not have a county GIS system? Which county?
Sutter.
I was with your boss yesterday. No, he didn't. Ken didn't come. Who else does not have a GIS system? Someone have their hands up? Oh, Orange. Orange, we don't. The county has a GIS system, the assessor. How many of you in your assessor's office run your GIS system? So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the assessor is responsible for the creation and the maintenance and upkeep of your GIS system in your county? All right, so there's about 10 counties or so that have that. And the other counties then, someone else maintains the GIS system in the other counties. So about half and half then, right? So if there's about 12 where the assessors maintain and the other half. Let me just do an additional thing on that survey. In the assessor's office where you all maintain and operate a GIS system, about how many people do you have in mapping? So let's start right here. How many?
Two.
So you have two people?
Plus a supervisor.
And so you all handle the setup and maintenance of your GIS system. Correct. Who set up your system for you?
MCAG, Merced County of Governments.
So the Merced County of Governments,
yes,
set up the system.
Yes.
And then they gave it over to the assessor to maintain it.
Yeah, air quality.
I see. What do you think it costs you a year to maintain the system? So you're just maintaining the base map, right?
Correct.
Not any of the layers or anything like
all
that.
The layers.
So you do all the layers also?
Except for the roads.
With just two people? Three people? Five people. Very good. Someone else? Yes?
As in SL County, we have two GIS and plus a supervisor.
So you're in San Mateo?
Yes.
So you have two. Did you all set your system up?
No, this is a county-wide project.
Okay, so it's a county-wide project, and then the assessor is what, just maintaining
our own layer.
Oh, you just maintain your layer?
Yeah,
which is the parcel-based layer. I see. All right, over here.
The whole staff's here, Santa Barbara County, and we maintain the parcel-based map, and we created it parcel by parcel ourselves.
So you created it, and you maintain it, and then other county departments use it?
Yes.
And the whole staff is here?
Yes.
It's falling off the cliff today. Right? Nobody's watching it. You're in big trouble.
We'll catch it.
You'll catch it. I have to talk to Kim about that. That's very good. Someone else for the assessor. Yes?
Yeah,
At LA County, we have 42 mappers.
Yeah.
We maintain, we set up our own system in mapping, actually, and we maintain it. We maintain the layer-based, parcel-based, assessor mapbook boundaries, tax rate areas, city boundaries.
And now, are you a part of the assessor's office or part of the surveyor's office?
Assessor's office.
So you're part of the assessor. So the assessor is responsible in LA County for the GIS base and the parcel maps,
yeah,
and also and the boundaries.
We share with the other major departments that has their own mm-hmm. application, like regional planning, public works, fire, sheriff, CAO.
And the CAO. So you're sharing it with others, but
yeah,
the assessor is wholly responsible. Some years ago, didn't the surveyor's office draw your parcel maps for you?
Around 25 years, right before Prop 13.
Before Prop 13, the surveyor had that responsibility, and then it moved to the assessor?
Exactly.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware that it had moved to the assessor. I thought the surveyor still did it. So what about one of the other counties? So they have 25 people in LA County, and you know they're a state unto themselves. So we understand. They have a law. And they have 25 people. Anyone else? Yes.
Riverside County, we have 18 QS specialists. We maintain parcel layer, mineral rights, condo layer, easements. And we work with the field maintenance, transportation land management, just planning, building, safety. And they maintain the system and we contract with them.
All right, well, very good. It gives me a flavor then for what is going on around us. In Orange County, we do not maintain, I'm sure George shared this with you, but we don't maintain the GIS parcel-based map. And matter of fact, we didn't even really basically participate in the basic setup of the map. Now, we do share data with the surveyor and the surveyor's office so that they are able to integrate the parcel-based maps into the parcel maps, into the base map concept. But we did not participate in that development. You know, about, I don't know, back in the early 80s, the county was talking about spending $60 million. Well, they started with $40 million, and then it grew to $50 million, then it grew to $60 million. Overall, I think they spent about $80 million in setting up the project. And by 1986, we basically had both a raster and digital-based parcel map system. Cost us less than $1 million. So we were way ahead of them for what we're doing. Of course, today you could say that we're kind of behind them, but we don't necessarily, we enjoy using some aspects of the system. But the maintenance and the overall cost of that system is something that we have not determined that we need to bring into the assessor's office. So there's a mix of things around the state that are going on in this area of GIS. The whole concept and the discussion about GIS parcel-based information is going to grow. It is going to continue to grow. The cities love the work that the counties do. The gas companies, the electrical companies, a lot of businesses, they love the work that the counties do, and they want you to continue to do that work, and they want you to give it to them when you finish with it so that they can use it to do their work and things like that. It's kind of interesting. I just left the assessor's meeting, and one of the discussions up there was about who owns the database and whether or not the database is in the public domain. I understand you all had a little discussion about that. But how many of you all think the database is in the public domain? A couple of you, right? A few of you, right? What brings you to that conclusion?
Well, in our case, in LA County, that's my personal opinion, not necessarily my county.
Smart man. Smart man. Go ahead.
It's, we build it. In our case, we create our maps right from the GIS base, so there's no two different products. So being that we deal with public mm-hmm. records, and we're funded by general funds, which is tax money, I think we should share with at least with other county agencies, with city, with government. Help the taxpayer. We can sell it to private companies.
Oh, so he says they would sell it to private companies, but they share. Yeah. When you ask the concept, you say, what do you mean by public domain? And you have to ask that concept. What do you mean by it's in the public domain? This issue of public domain is attempting to be defined in the law. And there's an issue of public domain records, how those records convey to second and third party users, not necessarily among county users, but how they convey to private industry and to private individuals. There's a company that last year came into California, and they are attempting to build what they call a United States-wide base map. But really, they're trying to build base maps among the larger states and counties in the United States. and build a large enough financial base so then they can build it among the smaller areas of the country. And they came into California, and they say that the county assessors and the county surveyors tend to be a little snippety in California and did not give them the information like it was given to them in so many other places. So they decided that they would seek an attorney general opinion to say whether or not parcel maps are in the what they call the public domain, and then therefore subject to be sold to them for the cost of the medium for transferring it to them. And so they went out and they got attorney general opinion. Attorney general said, "Yeah, we think that that's so and that's true and everything." And how many of you think assessors are bound by attorney general opinions? Smart crowd. Yeah. So one of the assessors yesterday had the gall to tell the guy who got the opinion. He says, "The assessors don't give an S what attorney generals say." And that guy was a little frustrated because he thought he had the holy grail in an attorney general opinion, that every assessor had to jump through the hoop to do what he wanted them to do. And he's still struggling, probably even this morning, trying to figure out what to do with that paper he had. Right? There were a couple of suggestions about that too. For more than 26 years in California, court cases says that assessors are not bound by opinions of attorney generals. Okay? For more than 26 years, we are not bound by opinion. He didn't go do his homework first, right? He just says, "Well, I'll find the public official that I think has statewide power and can order the rest of the public officials in the state of California to give me an opinion." Well, hell, I'll give him an opinion. So he's a little frustrated today, and he's struggling with the concept of the opinion and so on. But the issue is, again, this, and it will go on, and there will be additional discussions about data that is developed with public funds and then how the general public gains access to it. Very often we get requests from newspapers under Freedom of Information. They say, "Give us your whole database." And the issue there is you ask them why. Why should we do that? So we work on behalf of the public. We write stories. We need access to your database to do research. And you have to give it to us because under Freedom of Information that is so. Is that true? What is that?
Do they give the newspapers for free?
Yeah. There lies the question. Newspapers are a business like any other business, all right? And so, you know, the newspaper, they'll run in and they'll threaten to sue you and everything, and if you just say no, they never show up. They never come back because their attorneys remind them that they are a business. Newspapers sell information and data to make profit. They are a business. They operate as a business. Now, they will argue with you, the reporters, of course, that they do the public good. And that's all well and good. If a newspaper is trying to write a story and we have some pieces of data that will help them, we help them. But do they have a right to your whole database? Do they have a right to all the files in your office and records in your office that you give it to them to create another day? No, they do not. No, they do not. And you want to keep that in mind. There is no reason for you to fall into that trap that somehow newspapers have some inalienable separate right from other businesses for you to give them information, large amounts of information and data. So that's another interesting concept that's going on. Let's talk for a second about SB 1386, passed in 1998. SB 1386 talked about privacy from public records for elected officials, peace officers, judges, and a whole host of other folks in the state of California. And it basically said that no government agency or agency could list the name of judges and police officers and even firemen and on, a whole list of folks. The name and addresses of those individuals could not be listed on the internet by a government agency. You all familiar with that?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. On September the 22nd, the governor signed AB 1595. How many of you familiar with 1595? Anybody? 1595 goes on to read, it says that 1595 prohibits a person, a business, or an association from publicly posting or publicly displaying on the internet the home address, telephone number of any elected or appointed official or that official's, any public official, appointed or other, if that official provides a written notice to the business or the association or has a written notice essentially on file with the assessor or any government agency. So the bill closed the loop. 1595 closed the loop. It says that no business or individual may also list the name. And of course, you all know how big that list is of names, right? 1595 also added in every congressman, every senator, every state assemblyman. It went on to add a whole host of names. And so now it puts us in another kind of funny position because we are the purveyors of the names and addresses of public officials. And public officials are police officers, your sheriff, your fireman, on and on and on. It's a huge list of names of people. The bill provided no provision for them to notify us. No form, no particular way for them to know, and no form or particular way. It just said notice. If they make a phone call to your office and say, I don't want my name posted, you're in trouble if you post their name on an internet or in an internet environment, the name and address. The whole issue has always been, even since 1386 passed, who are these people? Who are they? Are they in my county? Do I know the L.A. County judges who live here? Do I know the police officers who work in L.A. County who live here? No, you don't. No, you don't. So most of us have removed names from things that we post on the internet. Is that correct? All right. There's another aspect of 1595, though, because now you have got to warn everybody that you sell that information to, that they have jeopardy if they in fact post the names and addresses of an elected official or an official as defined in 1595 on the internet. Now, why do you have to warn them? People tend to have lawyers, right? And you tend to be what's called deep pockets. And for the last 10 years, even after 1386, you know, we've been selling information to people. We can't post it, but then they turn around and post it, right? You see your roll posted all up and down the state, CD data and everywhere else with names and addresses in it and so on and so on. Well, today with 1595, you have to warn those people. If you post, you may be subject to 1595. And you have to warn them to protect yourself so that if something bad happens, you can say, I told them not to. I told them not to do it. And it is in writing, and they signed saying that they understood that I told them not to do it. I didn't try to stop them from doing it because I don't get in the middle of business and commerce. I didn't try to stop them from doing it. I just told them they shouldn't do it. And there's a law that says that they shouldn't do it. That's your first line of defense, is that you told them not to. Of course, to a good attorney, doesn't mean very much. So I think that we can expect that we're going to see some litigation in this area. Now, the issues are this. If nothing happens to anybody, everybody goes along merrily and happy. Now, you all are aware that about 5 years ago, there were some undercover DEA agents, and one of them lost his life, and one of their kids were kidnapped. And the information that was obtained came from a recorder or from an assessor's office by one of the gang members that participated in that. With this legislation in place, we would be in big trouble. We'd be in big trouble if we participated in any way, shape, or form. And the conveyance of the information to a third party puts you in jeopardy. Is that how our laws work? Because you were an unintentional co-conspirator, right? Unintentional co-conspirator. All right. 1595. Get a copy of it. Read it over. Says some different things in there, and you'll get interpretations from your county council and from many other folks, but you need to be aware of that. The laws and the world, our world is changing. How many of you post your maps on the internet? A lot of you have maps on the internet. Very good. Can a person search through the map and find the name and address of an individual? So the maps are posted just with parcel numbers? Most of you? Mm-hmm. Just parcel numbers. So you have to know the parcel number to find the map and so on. Is there an address associated with the parcel number? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you do have addresses associated with parcel numbers. All right. Well, there's a thing you need to start taking a look at. You might have to start taking a look at that. Because even posting the address along with the parcel number, which creates location, additional location, could be an issue here. None of you have your roles posted on the internet, is that correct? You have your, you have the role values are posted with a, what, a parcel number or an address hook? With
parcel numbers and addresses, no names.
So you can put in an address and find the value of a property and so on. Or you can put in the parcel number and find the value, but no names.
No names.
No names. And I think all, none of you have names posted, right, on the internet?
Tax information.
Tax?
Tax information.
So you can put in a name and find tax information?
No, no. Oh. Parcel number, you can get your tax.
Right.
Taxes are paid, values.
Okay. So you can put in parcel number and get the taxes that are paid. And so on, and the valuation on the property. And I think that same thing is true in Orange County. Okay, so, but again, you cannot do a name search in our county and in none of our counties. I think you can do a name search. Yes?
Do you think that is adequate in your opinion if you eliminate names? If you have addresses which are so useful for so many people,
yep.
Is that adequate?
No, it is not adequate for the purpose of the law.
Staying out of court.
It's not adequate for staying out of court. He's right on. You've taken a step and you've gone in the right direction, but you know the recorders also have a huge problem here. And because it is, if you know anything about our mechanisms or system, you know it's pretty easy to still find this information. The issue is that the courts are trying to keep people from just hiding behind the internet to find this information so they can do it in the middle of the night. You have to physically go into a government agency to get the information nowadays, okay? You'd have to come to us in some way to get the information if you obtain it from the recorder or from the assessor's office. You'd have to physically come in because you can't just go onto the internet. However, you don't have to be real clever nowadays, you know, to put the pieces together from information in a variety of different places. You don't have to be real clever. But one of the things that, you know, we have all found out over the years is that many people who perpetrate these kind of crimes and things like that are not real clever. Some of them are not real smart. And they tend to leave tracks if you force them into an environment where they have to come in and visit with people and things like that. You know, they will leave tracks. And so the law helps. It doesn't help the person that the crime was perpetrated on. It just helps us to track them down after the fact. Kind of sad, isn't it? Yeah, but that's the way that these sit-ups work. How many of you all use photopictometry in your counties? LA County, Orange County. So many of you don't use photo bases yet, huh? You're not buying?
Yeah, we have photos.
Which county?
Sutter.
Sutter County. Sutter has photos, yes?
We have air photos.
Which county?
Not pictometry, Madera.
Madera, yes. Which one?
Santa Cruz,
Madera. Santa Cruz, area photos.
Fresno.
Riverside.
Santa Barbara.
All right, so a lot of you then are using
Kings County
does also, for sure. I know you do. All right. And are those photographs, the photo pictometry, is it integrated with your parcel base in any way?
Yes.
So then you can do a parcel search and look at the photographs that correspond to the parcel that you're looking at.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. So then you all are benefiting from this whole issue of see it flat and see it in 3D also, or two dimensional.
We're not seeing it.
Two.
Just two dimensional.
Yeah, it's the photographs. Two dimensional. I slipped. Yeah. Are some of you all using the orthogonal base capability to do measuring and things like that? Measure slopes and so on? You all are. So you all have pictometry's database?
Yes.
Okay. And you know, pictometry also has a database that if they take pictures over time, the system will actually go in and determine if square footage has changed in houses and things like that, as long as the square footage is, you know, represents a certain percentage of the property. And so they can actually do a page merge from year to year, and you can actually slide the properties over each other, and you can see how the outlines change. You can also see property that has been demolished and taken down in their, through some of their new photo capability. It's a baby in the woods. It's still growing, and they're getting it there, but it's still interesting when you take a look at some of the things and some of the tools that are becoming more available. You know, the government's had that kind of capability for a lot of years, but it's coming now into our domain and into our space where the computer can actually check right angles to see if right angles have changed in pictures and from picture to picture and so on. So it's pretty interesting. With that, I'm going to stop and we can do some Q&A and Well, I'm doing real good on time.
Real good.
Why don't we do some Q&A, some questions about things that you all may have or some interest that you all may have that we might shed a little light on. Yes?
As most of you know, probably several years ago, one of the county recorders was followed home by some of these Los Encomacade, or it was in Cynthia's famous box, was that right?
What was
the
it?
The county recorder.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And it was beating up in their own home, right?
Yes.
Right. So, my question would be, as you understand this new law about names and addresses, since the assessor's elected official and we're all deputized, do we fall under that, or is it not a protected class?
No, you can fall under it, yes. You know, the law speaks more to deputy sheriffs and deputy DAs and deputies of the court. But in the Constitution, you're also a deputy. You're a deputy to the assessor, and you're a constitutional officer if you're deputized. And so, yes, you could fall under that. You very well may fall under that, yes. I would argue that you do.
But at the same time, there's been no change that you, by law, shall furnish everything at the front counter, right? In terms of your role.
No, you don't have to furnish everything. You know, the law about the role, though, is clear. It's been in place for 47 years, maybe 50 years now. The law requires that the assessor create the role, because that is the deliverable that the assessor has to deliver. And the law says the name and the address, mailing address, it does not have to be the situs, but the mailing address, parcel number, and the value and any exemptions that inures to the property has to be listed in the role. Okay, those are the five or six pieces that are required by law to be listed in the role. Now, I am thinking that somewhere along the way we're going to have to deal with that issue. We're going to have to deal with that under this new public protection laws and things that are coming along. We're probably going to have to deal with that as an issue. The recorders have serious problems because birth certificates, death certificates, all over public records are names and signatures and all kinds of things. The law judge who was involved in 1386 was actually a judge who led that task force. And he was frustrated like mad with recorders because the recorders kept saying, you can't do this. You can't restrict this and you can't restrict that and everything. And he basically, toward the end of the session, it was 1 year that he chaired the committee, he basically told the recorders that they never wanted to appear in his court if they didn't find a way to protect the public under 1386. And then I think his committee was very instrumental in 1595. But basically what he's saying to the public officials is, he's saying, you guys need to find a way, because if somebody gets harmed or damaged because of the records and things that you give and sell and provide to people in general, don't come in my court. You don't want to appear in my court, is what he said to us. And to have a judge kind of say that to you, for sure, I'd never go in his court. But he chaired the committee, and he's very frustrated about the fact that publicly the officials are saying, Your Honor, California's an open state. We've been an open state for 100 years. Our data is everywhere and everything. You know, he says the world changed, ladies and gentlemen. It changed. It has become a more dangerous place. And you have become a co-conspirator because of your behavior. You come into my court and tell me, Your Honor, I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't help it. It just happened that way. He says, you are not going to like what he's going to do to you. So that's very interesting. I think you're going to find that more and more. The judges are going to ask us, what did you do? What did you do? Did you do anything to attempt to protect? And we just need to be able to kind of answer up to that. So my first line for you of defense, of course, is tell other people, don't do it. You know, and make sure you tell them, get it in writing that they signed, that you told them, don't do it. And then if they do things, then you can duck behind that first until he nails you. All right. But it's going to be interesting as we move forward in this whole issue. You know, the items of identity theft is rampant. It is the fastest growing crime in the world, identity theft. It is the biggest business in the world, the fastest growing business in the world, this whole issue of identity theft. Did you ask me if you could film these things? You did not. You didn't even inform me that you filmed it. So my person belongs to me, it does not belong to you. Right? Yes.
As far as the tax collector, they weren't included in it.
The tax collector?
Right.
They weren't included in?
Well, they put out the information that the assessor may not have.
Oh, the tax collector took out proper numbers. The tax collectors cannot publish the names on the addresses of public officials. They can't publish them. They're included. Oh, absolutely. It says, see, they're a government agency. And no, under 1386, it says no government agency can publish on the internet. So the tax collector is covered. They're a government agency. So they're covered by that. Are you a reporter? What county do you work in? Santa Barbara. I know your boss. Tax collectors are definitely covered. The recorders are covered. We're all covered by 1386. It says government agencies specifically in 1386. And then 1595 just brought everybody else in. It brought in persons and businesses and associations. So it brought in everybody. 1595 brought the rest of the circle in. And said, you all also may not publish. So it's a kind of a closed loop world now. You know, everybody is kind of in the circle. We don't know what it means, but all of a sudden we're all in the circle. You see, before businesses used to say to us, they say, well, you can't publish, but I can publish, and you can't prevent from selling. You can't stop selling to me. You have to sell to me because the information is in the public domain. And so under freedom of information, you have to sell me the role with all that information on it. And because I'm not restricted from publishing those names, tough. You know, tough if there's a law enforcement officer that's worried about his family or a DEA agent who doesn't want his name and address, but too bad, I'm a business. I can do what I want to do. 1595 said to them, you do so at your own peril from now on because the law says you should not do this, okay? So that's what the change is. It has brought everybody else under the same umbrella that we're under. And we need to be very careful, and you need to be doubly careful. Okay, some other questions, yes?
Familiar with other states that are closed states with this type of information?
There are either seven or 11 states that where property information is closed. And you have to come in. If you want things, you can get it, but you have to sign for it and identify yourself. I think they even take a photocopy of your driver's license to get various type of property information other than your own property information. You can get information about yourself. So there's either seven states like that, or really, it's the other way around. I think there's only 11 open states. But I'm going to ask the NACO task force about that because it's a good question. But I think there are really only like 11 maybe open states where you can get anything about another individual and their property and so on. Okay, but this is a good question. We'll follow up on it. Yes.
Hey, you kind of left me on a cliffhanger here.
Yeah, he's on a cliffhanger.
Yeah. With all these things, what was the general opinion of the assessors? What about the bargaining, for example?
You know, the assessors, we put 1595 on the legislative agenda just to bring it up. They were aware that the governor had signed this into law back on September, so the assessors are aware of it. But you see, 1595 didn't really add any new thing for assessors. It just added more names of people who are protected. But 1595 didn't add any new things to us. It says that we may not post on the internet this kind of information, all right? And as far as I know, there's no assessor doing it. And matter of fact, as far as I know, there's no county that is posting the names and addresses because, again, we're not posting any names or addresses because we don't know who these people are.
Right.
We don't know who they are. And the law provided no provision for us to know. It just says that they should notify us. Well, I have six people in my county who have notified me. Okay. So, but since I don't know who any of them are, I just don't do it. All right. So I'm erring on the side that I don't want to be drug into court because I posted the name and the family or whatever of some person that gets into trouble and their family gets into trouble. I don't want to be a part of that lawsuit. I just truly don't want to be a part of that. So then I'm erring on the side of not posting, period, on the internet. You know, I published the role in hard copy because it is required to be posted in hard copy. That's it. That's it. And internal to the office, people can do various types of research and things, but I don't provide a research tool for the general public in any type of a general public domain. Yes?
I thought I heard one assessor last year say that he was posting everything on the internet, except it was behind a subscription service.
And Kings County has a subscription service.
I think it was Napa.
Device. Napa may have a subscription service also. I know Kings County has a subscription service, and maybe Napa does also. And so he says it's behind a subscription service. That's fine.
You know, remember again that, you know, since assessors are not subject to the Attorney General, they might not be subject to anybody else. And nothing nothing happens to you until something happens, right?
Yeah.
Kind of an oxymoron, but it's true, right? Everything goes along and everybody is happy until something happens. And then at that point, you find out that, you know, what you thought you could do and what you've been doing is not pleasant.
But doesn't that seem subject to your interpretation of what it means to post on the internet?
Well, you know, again, the issue here is I don't know what the interpretation is going to be. You know, for me, I choose to err on the side of being exceptionally careful. Okay? Many and most of the assessors tend to err on the side of being exceptionally careful because, again, this is uncharted water. In this whole area of public, what's in the public domain, this is uncharted water. So we're tending, most of us, to err on the side of being. Some folks may test it, and that will then we will get maybe some case law that will start to deal with this issue. So it's going to be interesting as we go forward. But I hear what you're saying. It does kind of leave you, you know, wondering where do we exist at and so on and so on. You know, in my office, we kind of have a saying, you know, when things go well, it is the responsibility of my staff. When things go badly, whose responsibility is it? Mine. So you see, they say, oh, I gave it to somebody, but it ain't my fault. It's his fault. He did it, right? Okay. So and I think most of you deal with your bosses that way, right? When things go badly, you blame it on the boss. Yeah. And when things go well, you take credit for it. So anyway, don't put your boss in front of that law judge, okay? That would be a bad thing to do. So be careful. Other things? Yes. No, freedom of information is applicable to all public information who by law is in the so-called public domain. All right? And you see, most public agencies don't have the protection that the assessors have. How many of you are familiar with 408? 408. Okay. 408 is part of the Revenue and Taxation Code. And 408 basically says that the assessor's records are not in the public domain. The assessor's records belong to the assessor. They're not in the public domain. Only records that are required to be kept under the law, records that are required to be kept, are in the public domain. How many of you think you have lots of records that are required to be kept? Smart people. None of you, almost none of the assessor's records are required to be kept. Your parcel maps are not required to be kept. Your property records are not required to be kept. And there's a fundamental issue there. The assessor is required to produce an annual assessment roll. An annual assessment roll. And the roll is to say what? What exists as of when?
Lien date.
Lien date, January 1st. Right? Well, who cares what existed last January 1st? Because if it was all destroyed and went away, and you didn't have anything to know about it, it would not matter. All the assessor is responsible for is producing the roll in the year in which it is required as of January the 1st. Are you required to keep records to do that? Not necessarily. And you aren't. You don't have to have any records from year to year. You have to maintain these databases and other things that we maintain. You just have to produce the roll as of January the 1st. So keep that in mind. That's a part of the law that a lot of folks don't focus on. But 408 is a very powerful document. And the other thing is, again, you know, 408 also protects you and protects the assessor. Because, you know, people can't say, well, you have to have documents over time and so on and so on. Assessors, you know, it's not required. You have to do discovery as of January the 1st. You have to decide how big it is, how small it is, how exempt it is as of January the 1st. Some people ask me, they say, do you have a disaster recovery plan? How many of you have disaster recovery plans? You spend a lot of money on them? Probably not. So three or four raise their hand. Most of you have no disaster recovery plan? Yeah, interesting. Well, you might be, you all maybe are thinking about it the way that we think about it, right? Why do you need one? Because let me say this to you. If we had a catastrophe in the state of California, an 8.5 earthquake, and it leveled 50% of the county, and leveled the assessor's office, and so on and so on. What does that information as of January the 1st last year mean?
Nothing. So why have it? It doesn't mean anything. Because you got to value what's in place as of this January 1st. And if it's all flattened and level, right? Then what are those records you've been saving for 5 and 10 years so that you know what the county looked like yesterday? It doesn't look like that today. And you have to value what's in place as of January 1st. So if you kept all your records and data and you've done all your work for January 1st and on December 31st we had that 8.5, what role are you going to publish in July of the next year, right? Not what was there on December the 31st. Mm-hmm. Only what's there as of January the 1st. Right? So think about it. So it is really not necessary for us to have elaborate disaster recovery plans. Now you should have some prudent thinking in that area. For sure you should do some prudent thinking in that area. You should have some, try to have something. It might help you out a little bit. But if it's all gone or flattened, our large portions of it are flattened, we got a hell of a job to do. Right? Okay, so think about that. I was, the grand jury sent me a notice about 4 weeks ago, and they said, we have been asking all the counties and the county departments about their disaster recovery plan, and we see that you don't have really a big, robust plan. And so I'm sending them back an answer. They come over and visited with me about it. And they go, Wester, you have really a different philosophy about this thing. And I says, we're in the what? We're in the discovery business as of January the 1st. That's it. So you start to cut to the chase real fast when you think about it. All right, then. Okay. Good question somebody asked. All right. So, yes?
A couple of questions for you. First of all, how does your county deal about people calling and asking for names?
People calling and asking for names. A couple of things. First of all, we don't provide a lot of public information on the phone. Okay, we cut that out about 30 years ago because it requires Bill to have a lot of people answering the telephone. If people can just call in, lawyers call us, people call us, and everything. What we tell people is if they're not asking about their property, a property, a specific property, then they don't get very much help on the phone. What they have to do is go ahead and send us a letter, send us a written request, and then someone in Bill's shop will answer that written request, but you have to send a written request. We provide very little general information, names and addresses on the phone, almost none, okay? They have to write in and ask us.
Okay. Right. Second question will be, as we all know, yes, you're right, not the only assessors, we're not bound by the Attorney General's opinion. After all, it's just an opinion. But we all know, and some of us know this person, people who will actually pursue it and go to court.
Yes.
We know that it's coming.
Yes.
And it is more likely that the courts will agree with the Attorney General.
It is most likely that the courts will not agree with the Attorney General.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. There are tons of arguments, and there's already case law that will cause the courts to not agree with the Attorney General. So, but that is a process that we'll work through. The other side of that is that it is an area that probably deserves some additional litigation just so that the issues in California can be dealt with. Okay. So one of the things is, you know, one of the guys, I guess, with this company, he says, well, we're not after the parcel maps, we're just after the GIS base maps. And so most of the assessor says, well, we don't maintain a GIS base, so you're going after the wrong crowd. All right, so there's only 5 or 6 counties that may actually produce and maintain a base map. And so that was news to him, too. So he says, well, we will then, so they say, you know, talk to the surveyors and on and on and on. And he says, well, how do they get the parcel map stuff? I said, well, in my county, I give it to the surveyor, but he can't transmit it to a third party. And someone says, well, I think he sells stuff. I said, well, in my county, my parcel maps are copyrighted under federal statutes. And if the surveyor is selling parcel maps, the penalty is $50,000 a page. So that's an interesting one. All right? It's $50,000 a page if you violate the copyright. Now, how can an assessor copyright parcel maps? How can we do that? Anybody? Take a guess. What?
It's our map.
Well, you say it's our map, but what else? What's the real reason? How come, why can an assessor copyright parcel maps?
For assessment purposes only?
Well, not for assessment purposes only.
It's an original work of art?
It's an original work of art. A parcel map is an original work of art. We create it. We create it. Therefore, the assessor under the Constitution of the State of California owns it. During his term of office, his or her term of office, they own the parcel map. It is their original work of art. And under the federal statutes, original work of arts can be what? Copyrighted. Copyrighted under the federal statutes. And the Attorney General's opinion doesn't mean crap to a federal statute, does it?
Don't work of art have to be physical? Like all this stuff is digital now?
Print them out. Every year, George prints out the parcel maps, puts them in a box, binds them up. You used to have to send a copy to the Copyright Office. For about 10 years you did that, right?
Yeah.
He used to have to send a box to the Copyright Office. It is no longer required after 12 years.
Something like that.
After 12 years, he just is charged with keeping a copy in his files. So he keeps a copy of my maps in boxes in the files with the copyright ledger on them, and he keeps them year to year, and so they are copyrighted and protected under federal statutes. Okay? So take me to court. All right. There's one other county, I think, that copyrights their maps, and several other counties, of course, are looking at that step. But the parcel maps are original works of art, and therefore they can be and are subject under the federal statutes to be copyrighted. Real simple, simple stuff, easy to do. Okay, so there are many other ways. And in the Attorney General's opinion, I think there was one little paragraph he wrote in there. He says, "I don't mean copyrighted stuff,"
okay.
Because copyrighted stuff is exempt, right? The Attorney General has no authority over federal statutes. Yes?
I think it's important to take a little closer look at the AG's opinion, because I understand the reaction, both pro and negative, and both of them have justifiable ways both directions. However, what I think is necessary when reading the AG's opinion is to focus on the specific question that was asked and answered. And the question that was posed to the AG from Joe Nation was, is existing information that resides with the county assessor subject to the same pieces of the California Records Act if it is in digital format. It's not saying that you have to, it doesn't say that you don't, and it's not saying what pieces of information. All of the question asked and was answered is, if you are maintaining it, if it was created in electronic format, is it covered by the California Records Act? And the answer is yes. Now, the determination of where it resides on the spectrum of what can be legally disseminated or not is not addressed.
It is interesting the way that he attempted to approach it. And even he says that all he was talking about was digital GIS-type parcel map based, not the individual parcel maps. That he recognizes that they have protection under 408. So it's kind of interesting the way he approached it. It's also interesting the way the AG approached it, because the AG really approached it outside of the question that he asked in a kind of a broader way. So we will leave it to some of our legal beagles. They will for sure spend some time as soon as some county gets a letter from the company saying, the Attorney General's opinion says I have a right to your stuff and you have to give it to me for $50, and that's the law. And some assessor will say, no, go away, goodbye, and hopefully he'll sue one or the other of us, and we'll get it all cleared up. See, our issue is, I don't have a dog in that hunt. If someone comes in and they sue us, and the laws or the courts say that it's A, B, or C, fine with us. We're administrators of the law. And if the court says, yeah, give it to them, you have to give it all to them, it's fine with me. As long as we have clear direction. Currently, there is not clear direction. And there are lots of opinions. Among 58 assessors, there's probably 15 opinions.
about what they have to do and what they don't have to do, and what the AG's opinion says and what it doesn't say. So this item will probably be discussed at great length during the course of the next fiscal year. So it's a good subject, though. And there's this whole issue about who owns so-called public data. You know, one of the issues also is that I'll take you into another area just for thinking. Your name and address, your property address, your credit card numbers, your Bloomingdale's card number, all of these other things, is that public information? Is it? Well, it's conveyed in the public, isn't it? By lots of companies. Equifax, TransUnion, practically every little guy that's got an internet address. It's conveyed in the public. Is that information property? Is it property?
Well, people sell it, so it makes it sound like property.
Right. So, and you get on the thing, but you say, well, people sell it, so therefore maybe it is property. It sounds like property. What is the definition of property? Something? Something what? Something you own. A little more than that. What is the definition of property? Tangible, it needs to be tangible, maybe. There's also intangible property, but let's say it needs to be tangible. So then what's the definition of property? Something that has value. Something that has value. Now, what TransUnion and them are doing, they are picking up information that is about you and belongs to you. If they were to give that information away, they are doing nothing illegal under the federal statutes. But the moment they ascribe a value to it and they sell it, it becomes property and it is your property, and there are statutes already on the books that makes what they are doing illegal. Because they're selling your property. The government chooses not to prosecute. And many individuals have not attempted to prosecute them under the property statutes. They can be prosecuted under the property statutes. See, if they just took it and gave it away, then they have not ascribed a value to it. But the fact is that they sell it. And when they sell it, then they violate existing federal statutes. And the federal government and our congressmen, because they get lots of contributions from these people, choose not to prosecute. Think about it. Think about it. That information and information about you belongs to you. Belongs to you. And I can take it and give it away, but I cannot sell it. Because the moment I sell it, I've entered a whole different domain under the statutes, okay? So there's another interesting area of the privacy laws and the property laws and how they can apply. Someone else, another question. Yes?
Well, in that regard, in this country at least, a credit card doesn't belong to you.
It belongs to the company that issued it.
Yes.
Right? But
and they can opt to sell it. In fact, the banks are the ones who sell that information.
Well, they tell you that.
Your Social Security card doesn't belong to you, it belongs to the government.
What you are laying out for us, you say there's an issue here, and it doesn't apply to Social Security cards, but it does apply to credit cards. The companies who issue you credit cards say that if you choose to use my card, then I have a right to collect information about its use. And I have the right to publish information about its use. Do they have the right, though, to say that you are the user and the purveyor of it? And there's conflict in the law. Now, what the government says is because you signed that agreement with them, then you have authorized them to do so. You have given consent. Okay? There's issues in the law on that issue also. Do you really give consent? Many people choose to opt out. And more people are opting out. So the issue was, did the public ever intend to give consent at the level that the card companies say that you did? Okay. The other thing is the issue of coercion. In the commerce today and in the conduct of business today, many people need and do use and have a need to use cards and plastic and other things. And so because of that and because of the way that commerce is conducted, maybe are you coerced into saying, you know, I got to sign this agreement. Because if I don't, I can't have a credit card, and I need a credit card to check into a motel and to a hotel. I need a credit card to catch an airplane, and so on and so on and so on. And under the new Homeland Security Act, is becoming also issues about those documents and really who owns them. You know, and also they're telling you more and more today when you're in an airport, they say you must have a federal piece of ID. All right, so a credit card is no longer a piece of ID. You have to have a federally issued, a government-issued piece of ID. A driver's license, right? Driver's license. Social Security card. Doesn't have pictures on it. Not too safe, and on. So there's a number of issues that are going on in our country under the Homeland Security Act. And so this whole area is going to be vetted over the next few years, I think, in this whole area. So it's interesting what's going on in our marketplace. For those of us who create and collect data, it's very interesting what is going on in the marketplace. Others? Yes?
I know you guys don't maintain your base map. Does Orange County sell the assessment or the base map to private entities?
Who's here from the surveyor's office? Anybody? From the county surveyor's office? Was someone here yesterday?
No, he'd be here. He's due a little while.
He's due on later on. Matter of fact, I may stay and listen to his presentation because I may need to sue him before the day is over. See what he thinks he owns. It'd be interesting. The surveyor is going to be here. I do think, in fact, that the surveyor, Orange County created this of the base map along with the gas company.
Yes.
Along with the gas company put in. So I think the gas company was like a participating partner. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't participate. Because I couldn't see how I could participate with one business entity and let them have access and give them access to my parcel maps when I'd be essentially putting it in the public domain. So I chose not to get involved in that contract. But I think the gas company participated with Orange County in creating a base map. Okay, well, like I said, up and down the state, there are a number of ideas about the product and putting the product into the domain. And that's what makes the public discourse so interesting. Because we're all different, and we see things differently, and we see the laws differently, and we react to the laws differently. So that's what makes this public discourse so interesting. We're not all the same. It's frightening, though, for businesses, isn't it? The people who want to do business, because we don't all do business the same. And so it's an interesting area that we all deal in and we work in every day. We see it differently, we react to things differently, and that is a part of our public discourse in this great state of California. All right. Someone else, yes?
Are there any mechanisms in place to go public? I can say I don't want to make any information available.
Well, there are a number of mechanisms. Of course, you know, you can call this 1-888 number. You can call and ask to have your phone number, your fax number, and so on a do not call list. And many of us have taken advantage of that. Even all the phones in the office have been put on the do not call list by solicitors. We get solicitation calls in the office. So all the phones, all the faxes in the office are on the federal do not call list, which says that, you know, we don't get a whole lot of spam. We still get a little bit, but we don't get a lot of junk mail on our fax machines, and we don't get junk mail on our phone calls. We don't get solicitors. So you can do that for all your home phone numbers, all your cell phone numbers. All of my numbers are on the federal do not call list. They're also opt out with all your credit card companies and all the credit cards that you have. You can opt out. There is kind of a universal number, but not really. You really need to tell Equifax and you need to tell each of the credit card companies that you choose not to have your information sold or purveyed to a third party for any purpose or reason. Now, they will argue with you and say that if you do that, you're not going to get the great credit card offers we send you every year, you know, to reduce your rate. And then you can move your card, you can move your rate, your your debts around, you know, among different cards and things like that. You won't get any of that anymore. And that's horrible for you. Not to get those solicitations. And it's horrible for you not to have us show up in your credit rating saying that we didn't solicit you for these things, all right? But you can opt out. It's a little bit more difficult to opt out for the credit cards on the credit card side. You have to do it pretty much card by card. And I need to look into that because I do think there is a kind of a universal. The three credit card companies, you can tell them to opt out. But on the phone side, on your phone fax side, there's just one number you can call. It puts you on the federal do not call list. Okay? It's a 1-888 number.
Well, I'd say it's more along the lines of parcel information. If people call up and demand parcel data on this, I might say, well, if you require a role, once you get back to it, you'll just immediately agree to let this go. We'll let the information go to the question.
You're saying that on the assessor's role, could you opt out of having the assessor department put your information out or whatever? There's not really a mechanism for that. There is no mechanism in California that I'm aware of for that.
The law does not provide for you to say to the assessor, you cannot list my name and address on the assessment roll. And the assessment roll is a public document in the Constitution of the state of California. So there is really no way for you, unless the citizens of the state of California, by proposition most likely, would have to say, yeah, you can do that. You can opt out. But it would require a constitutional amendment because the role is required in the Constitution. Okay? So there's not a mechanism that I'm aware of or a provision to allow you not to have your name and mailing address published. Now there's another aspect of this. I tell police officers very often when they call and inquire about this, how many of you live in a P.O. box? My address is a P.O. box. Is a P.O. box. I don't list a physical home address on anything. It's not even on my driver's license. My driver's license says Webster Guillory, Post Office Box XXX, Santa Ana, California. And Webster physically lives in Newport. But I live in a P.O. box. And I have for 35 years. Right? 35 years. All you do is just get your mail in a P.O. box. You don't have to get mail at home. I don't get any mail at home. Nothing comes to my house other than that resident stuff.
Is that a three-bedroom P.O. box?
Three-bedroom P.O. box. Two bathrooms, three bedrooms, and a walk-in closet.
Not that big. Mommy, Daddy, shrunk your head.
Yeah. P.O. box. Okay? How many celebrities have their names and addresses and so on on the assessment roll?
Almost zero, right? They're smart, right? How do they avoid it?
Trust.
Trust. Trust.
Their property is held in trust. And they go out, they put everything into a trust, and everything is hidden behind that trust. And their names appear on nothing. Everything goes to a trust or a trustee and so on. You can do the same thing. Just get your P.O. box. And let everything go to the P.O. box. Stop listing your name, your address. People say, you ever go in the store these days? It's really funny. You go in the store, and what do they say to you? You know, you're just cashing out at the cash register. They say, will you give me your phone number? How many of you do that? That's stupid. You're a turkey. You're a turkey. Why would you give some cashier behind a counter your home phone number because she asked for it? Yeah. Well, give me your zip code. Why? I'm paying cash for this transaction. Why do you need my zip code? Well, we do a survey, you know, we find out where our people come from. Tough. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. You know? But they do this all the time to you. Someday they say, well, can I have your home phone number? And you know, I hear people just rattling off their home phone number. As a minimum, if you're going to give a phone number, give them your work number. Why would you give anybody your home phone number? You know, and many of you, you have home phone numbers that are not listed anywhere. But the moment that person asked you and you gave it to them, you just listed your phone number in the public domain. The minute you did that, you immediately canceled out the issue with the phone company and you put your phone number in the public domain because they publish it then everywhere. It also can negate your federal registry in the 888 where you say don't send me, don't solicit, and then you go in and you give them your phone number, you just said solicit the hell out of me. Call me on my phone number, solicit the hell out of me. That's what you just did. You got to think about these things. You got to think about these things. If you're paying cash for something, why do you need to give that person your own phone number? Okay? If you write a check for something, how many pieces of ID are required?
One. One piece of ID. A driver's license number or a credit card number with a valid date. That's it. Only one. Not three, not four, not five in the state of California. One piece of information is required. That's it. They can't ask you for any more than that. Okay? Keep that in mind. Lots of things in this whole, this public information environment that you need to be aware of. But when somebody asks you for your phone number, don't give them your phone number. You know, you just go, oh, they just asked me for my phone number. They didn't ask me for my name. Well, 9 times out of 10, they already have hooked your name to your phone number. Yeah? It's very interesting when you see, when you go around and look at some of the screens in some of these stores. How many of you get a little thing in the mail every now and then from Bed Bath & Beyond that says, come in, and if you will give us your name and phone number and address, we'll give you a $5 gift certificate that you can spend in the store. You are cheap. You are really cheap. That's all I can say about that. You're a cheap person. For $5, you're going to give them your name. Some people didn't give them their social security number. And you go to that little counter, and they ask you to fill out a card with tons of personal information. Then they give you a $5 gift certificate. Turkey. Turkey. You need to share that with all your boyfriends and girlfriends. Tell them, don't be a turkey. Don't sell out for $5. It's not worth it. All right, think about it. All right, I've got 10 minutes left. Something else. George is going to put the hook on me in a second or two.
Well, this I've got to check out. But yeah. I know when I use my credit card to get gas at a Chevron station, they key in, you have to key in your zip code. And now I'm not sure if I keyed in before I can pump gas or if they ask it afterwards. I think it's before. Is it?
Yeah, before.
So how can they get away with that? I mean, that's something new that just happened.
Well, they get away with it because you do it.
Well, you don't. You can't go further.
But you see what you're saying? You say, well, you can't do that. I know an attorney. He has not flown since 9/11. He will not go into an airport and submit his person to search. Because it is in violation of the 14th Amendment, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
They're matching the zip code to your credit card.
Yeah, they match your zip code to your credit card, is what they do, right?
Oh, I know what they
do. So that's what they do. And you acquiesce to it because you want the service. And that's why I talked about earlier coercion. There's an area of the law that we have not delved into yet, that maybe you are being coerced for the service to give up personal and public and personal information about yourself. We'll delve into that. But under the 14th Amendment, what is going on in every airport in the country today is illegal. Under the 14th Amendment. It's unreasonable search, isn't it? Without probable cause. So everybody that walks into an airport is considered to be someone who has to be searched. It's unconstitutional. And there are a lot of people who don't fly anymore because of that reason, because they refuse to submit their physical body to just an unreasonable, without probable cause search.
But don't they get, they're allowed to do it because we're in a state of war?
Allowed to do it because we're in a state of war. Where in the Constitution does it say that the citizens of the United States, because the country is in a state of war, can be searched and your house can be searched and the government can dig into your public records? Where is it at? It's not there. The Constitution says the opposite. It says exactly the opposite. Read the 14th Amendment.
They go after them or who?
They have gone after them. Read the 14th Amendment. It's very interesting. When we went into a state of war, was the Constitution set aside? The Constitution wasn't set aside. The government cannot set the Constitution aside in the United States. So under the 14th Amendment, every time you walk through an airport, the unwarranted search and seizure of your goods for even a few minutes is unconstitutional. Interesting. I just came through an airport last night. They searched me up and down and seized all they wanted to, right? Since I was trying to get home from 500 miles away, it was all right with me.
Our bank account number was printed in addition to the social security number on our pay stubs.
Yeah.
It caused quite a flap.
Caused quite a flap, didn't it? Yeah.
You know, and I don't know how many counties still do that. We stopped about just a year ago. I raised the issue more than 11 years ago. And the auditor controller claimed, you know, he couldn't fix the system, all these other things. We could have sued his butt. But, you know, we let him get away with it. We let our government officials get away with a lot of things that they shouldn't be allowed to get away with. But these things happen, and it is very dangerous when that happens. Of course, it violates your person. How many of you, when you pay your income tax, you give a check stub or your checking account number to the IRS so that they can deposit the money that is due back to you into your checking account? How many of you do that? Raise your hands. Raise them high. When I have turkeys in the room, I want to see them. So now the IRS owes you money. And if you give them your check stub and that account and the tracking and what's called the ABA number, which is the banking transmittal number, so they can deposit that money directly into the account, they will do so, and that's a good thing, right? Suppose you owe the IRS money. What happens? They take it and they don't have to even inform you, because you have given them the right to go in and out of your checking account anytime they want to. And they take it. And many, many people wind up having shortage in the checking account, because the IRS computer doesn't wait until it notifies you. It just says, you owe me money. I have access to a checking account that you own. I take my money. Because the government has first right when you have given it to them, to your assets, all right? Be aware of that. So just to get back $50 or $75 from the IRS timely, forget it. Let them send you a check. Let them send you a check. Don't give them access to your checking account number, because they have both deposit and debit access when you give them that number. And they exercise it liberally. They take it liberally. So be careful about that. Another turkey thing. They call it convenience. And you say, it's a great convenience. I don't have to get a check and then go deposit it in the bank. But boy, the downside is a killer. The downside is a killer. And do you know how many of you think that when they calculate that you owe them money, that they always do it exactly right? You know? So they don't always do it exactly right. You know, instead of them, they say, well, you only owe me $100. It may wind up being $1,000 or $2,000. And they will take that money out of your account. They just take it. And then you will call. You'll be running around saying, "Oh, who took the bank?" Says the IRS took it. And you start calling them, and you're lucky if you get through in about 3 weeks, right, or a month. In the meantime, you're broke, and all your checks are bouncing, and on and on. Do they care? They're called bureaucrats, government bureaucrats, and they hide behind computers and things like that. You know about that because we do the same thing. The computer did it. See, they know what I'm talking about. The computer did it. I'm among friends here. The computer did it. All right.
So when you retire and you're getting your Social Security check, you're not going to have a direct deposit?
Into my account?
Yeah.
I haven't decided yet. But just because you get a Social Security check, that's a banking transaction. So they then can't go in and out of that account. Now, there is an issue, I think, that occurred where the government had over-deposited a Social Security check into an account, and the government did attempt to attach that, and the courts prohibited it. The person had to pay them back, of course, but the government could not follow that check into the account and take the money out because it was not authorized. It's not authorized. So EBT, which is electronic benefit transfer, EBT is the term that's used. That is a transaction. That is not the same as allowing the IRS to come in and out, because the IRS has other kinds of privileges, but the Social Security Department does not have that same privileges today. Tomorrow, who knows? Yeah. All right, but it is changing. Yes.
It's just a personal thing, but it happened to my dad after he passed away, and I believe the government got back and took the money back.
They came into the account, took the money out.
They must have, because at the end, the balance was zero.
They took the cap. So he says that
my husband just did, and I had to pay the check back, but they didn't go into.
They didn't go into the account. So there's different ways. He says they went into. He thinks they went into his father's account. She says they made her pay the money back because they didn't go into the account. And I don't think they have, under the EBT, Electronic Benefit Transfer Authority, I don't think the government was given that authority. For a period of time, I was on that board. And I think that's one of the things we fought against.
because I recognize that the government makes errors.
The bank,
and it would be devastating if they could just go into a Social Security account and remove money. It could be very devastating. So I think we fought against that. I don't know exactly how it came out, but we fought against that. But not the same if you tell the IRS that they can deposit money into your account for income tax. They can also take money out of your account for any other reason that they feel that they have authority, or they feel that they need to debit. They can debit from your account. Think about it. That's given somebody a lot of authority to just go into your account anytime they want because they think that they made an error or mistake and debit from your account.
So, what the best way to pay the income tax? You give out the check.
Without the check?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can put it on your credit card. Imagine you could put it on your credit card. So you could do it on a credit card. But, my thing is a lot of us say, well, we're in a modern age and I don't use checks anymore. I do everything online and so on and so on and so on. Well, it's okay if you want to do that. Keep a few checks around for certain things. Keep a few checks around for certain things. Okay? George, how are we doing?
Getting close.
Getting close. All right. Anyone else? Anything else? Any burning issues?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm from Plaza County, so you might know.
From Placer?
Yes.
Bruce Deer?
Yes.
Bruce used to work with me.
Yeah, I know.
Right here in Orange County. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we ran him away, you know.
Did you get to talk to this issue yesterday in the assessors conference? Because
we didn't talk about credit cards and stuff like that. We talked about 1595 and 1386, and we talked about mapping and GIS and things like that. We had great conversations about that. Assessors don't worry about this kind of stuff. They don't pay us enough money to worry about credit card stuff. Yeah, we don't worry about that other stuff. Very interesting. The assessors, I think I did a privacy presentation to the assessors about 4 or 5 years ago, and everything. I'm on the International Privacy Council, and so on. Yes.
There was a discussion yesterday in open session about using the APN on a grantee to transfer by and. I was wondering, did the assessors talk about that issue at all?
In a meeting about 2 or 3 years ago, there was discussion about whether or not the assessors had to provide to the recorders direct access or access to the assessors' database for parcel numbers so that they could be put on deeds and so on and so on. Well, there's nothing in the law that says that. There's no provision in the law. Of course, it helps us sometime in processing. If the recorder, if the deed parcel number is on the deed, it helps some time in processing. But there is not such a requirement. There's also another issue that's being discussed a little bit also is about what is the assessor-recorder relationship? There's been a discussion going on about that. That part of the law I've only looked at a little bit, and that part of the code. However, in Orange County, as early as back in the 50s in 1964, when documents come into the recorder's office by ordinance in Orange County, the assessor is supposed to get them first. And the reason where that came about is that in 1964, by ordinance of the board and local ordinance, the assessor was responsible for microfilming and setting up the record base for the county. And the ordinance still exists. And so the assessor then was to get the deeds and other documents first to microfilm them. Then he gave them to the recorder. Of course, it's being done the other way these days. But on any day, I could go to the recorder and says, "Okay, I get everything first." And there's an ordinance that says that. All right. So it's being done. It's done in different ways. But by law, the recorder is responsible to make sure that you get certain documents and data, and that you also get them timely. There is not a requirement that says that the assessor has to give to the recorder a parcel number for a deed or for deeds or things like that. There's not such a regulation. Okay. But there's an interesting area there. How many of you believe or think that parcel numbers are a legal description in the state of California?
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, if the parcel map was recorded with a deed as a supporting documentation, then there is some credence.
The parcel number may be a legal description in the state of California. A parcel number may be a legal description in the state of California. Yep, absolutely. Keep
some
that in mind.
Cases, that's all they have.
That's right.
in many court cases, it's all they have, and the courts have ruled that parcel number in the state of California may be a legal description.
Yeah, but that can be changed.
Well, anything can be changed. What kind of answer is that? You know, we, in California, we have the best legislature that money can buy. Anything can be changed. Is that right? Under that guideline. I think you, this lady here was first.
Yeah. Under what conditions can it be a legal description?
Under what condition?
Yeah.
I can go into court with the parcel number and parcel map, and the courts will accept that and uphold that as a legal description. No question. No question. I know many of you think differently and believe differently. Yeah. Hear me clearly. No question about what I'm telling you. Okay? No question about what I'm telling you. It's been adjudicated already. Already been adjudicated more than one time. And I know in some counties, you know, your lawyers tell you, no, you know, parcel number is not a legal description. You don't have to worry about it. Your parcel numbers may be a legal description, and they are can be upheld that way in the court in the state of California. All right? That's it.
Very simple question for you. Since real property and personal property appraisers in the assessor's offices, they carry out a very big function in valuing property. Very important job. They're licensed by the state. In your colleagues' opinions, do the mappers of the assessor's office carry out such an important function that they need state licensure?
Maybe the state should license them?
Right.
I see. I don't know. Among a bunch of mappers, what do you all believe? I'm one lonely assessor here. You think I'm going to get in the middle of that? I'm not. What do you all believe? How many of you think you should be paid more? I'm with you, man. They didn't elect me because I was dumb. Okay. At least not that they could show or prove. Right? All right. Yes. And I got to finish. George, you got the hook out for me. Yeah.
Prior to the recordations of facts and parcel maps,
yeah.
You know, with the work on the bond issues and so forth,
yeah.
Who does the delineation of the pick up which parcels are actually to be bonded? Your department or the surveyors?
I think the surveyor does. Yes. Yeah. We may have some play in that, but I really think the surveyor does. I don't think we get involved in that too much, not that I'm directly aware of. However, from time to time, George does things that I don't know about. Not real often, but every now and then. All right, and then normally he comes over and he talks to me about it. And you know, we kind of work on a kind of a general rule. First of all, you don't surprise the boss, but if you do, apologize. it tends to work. It works pretty well, and things like that. But no, I got a great staff of folks that work with me, and many of us have been together for many years, and they kind of know what pisses me off and what doesn't. You know? And that's a good relationship, you know, when the staff knows what makes the boss mad and things like that. And I've never figured out how to make them happy. other than when I ask them if they want more money. Yeah. That's a good thing. All right, well, look, I've enjoyed spending this time with you and getting to learn a little bit more about some of the things that are going on. I agree with you all that the issues about access to geodigital data is going to become kind of a hot-button issue. It is a hot-button issue kind of all over the country more and more, and I serve on a couple of national committees, and people are talking about this issue in a lot of places, and data in the public domain and documents in the public domain. And things like that. State of North Carolina, on their parcel maps, they actually put an outline of the house. And because of public safety, the fire department wants to know, if you have children under the age of 11 years old, you have to put an X on the parcel map to show in which corner of the house they sleep in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's public safety. I would want the fire department to know that my kids were in the south corner of the house if my house was burning down. So people do this, right? But how about all those other guys out there, yeah. Right? That know which window to break into to get your kids out of the bed at night while they're sleeping, right? Right. Well, they've had a couple of cases like that. But there's issues there. There are a lot of issues there. So public safety on one hand, on the other hand, pedophiles.
Interesting. Difficult times. So we have some difficult issues, and because public records and public documents can be purveyed very simply these days, and they can be misused very simply these days, I think as a society, we have some challenges, and we need to talk through and think about these items. There's no question that for the good of the order and for the good, that probably a lot more data should be generally in the public domain for the good. But it's when the difficult things occur, the downside, the dark side occurs, is where then where you and I, we raise our heads as parents and as people who would like to think that we continue to have some semblance of personal property and privacy and a right to personal property and privacy under the Constitution of this country, then those issues rear up. And normally when I ask people, do you think that you have a right to privacy? I think most of you would raise your hand. You have some right to personal privacy. I think you believe that. Then does it apply to everyone else also? Or does it just apply to you? And that's the question you need to think about as you go about doing this business on a day-to-day basis. All right? With that, thank you. You've been a great crowd.
Appreciate that lighting on a matter of subjects, and it took time out to spend the time with us this morning. Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Okay, we're going to take a, make it a 15-minute break at 10:20.
Their checkout time, I noticed, is noon, and our schedule is 12:30. Are we okay in this hotel from 12:30 or 1 on the checkout on the rooms, or not?
I really don't know. I don't think so.